At the end of the day, making free content doesn't come cheap. Show your support for the independent content you're listening to right now at patreon.com/8bitlife. That's patreon.com/8bitlife. Welcome to a fine edition of my so-called, no, I'm kidding, my so-called 8-bit life. I'm your host, Roberto de Villegas. The reason I opened up with a little bit of a jump point thing is because I am talking to successful Kickstarter of his thing called Mercury Counter, Bryce Castillo, which I wish that would came out a lot cleaner than it should have.
Do you want to try again?
Let's try. Let's not try that again. No, we keep rolling. Bryce, how's it going, sir?
I'm doing all right. I've texted you before, the other day, and I have been having stress headaches.
Yeah, what's the deal with this? I mean, I know there's a lot of stuff going in your life. I don't know what you could talk about. So
I can talk about most of it. So I have like 8 different things going on at the same time. So I'm leaving my job on Friday.
Yep.
I am moving halfway across the country in 3 or 4 weeks.
Yep.
I have to pack up basically everything I've ever touched into a tiny pod and into my car, and then I have to drive halfway around the country.
Yep.
And then I have to, and before all of that, I have to fulfill this Kickstarter.
Yeah.
And I have to finish this album, and I have to it's a perfect storm. This is my Sharknado happening now.
Well, you're the one. What's funny about all this, and I'm glad you can kind of alluded to what's happening with you moving. Essentially, you're moving to here. You're moving to Austin, Texas,
right?
And when you had mentioned to me like when that was happening, I think it might have been like when it was really honestly going to happen, because it's been something that you'd been kind of thinking about and kind of playing around, and I won't go into all the nitty-gritty stuff because not all of it can be revealed yet.
Right, we can leave it at that.
Right. That was back during South By?
You had a goal of either here or San Francisco.
Right.
Yeah, I was laying out broad strokes for right now.
Right, exactly. And so before
this surprised me. Okay, so I'm going to talk in abstract here. But the timeline got compressed at the very last minute. And so suddenly everything had to get done before that move, which also got moved up.
Which at the point, and what's interesting was that when that was just more of a broad stroke concept, like, yeah, by the end of the year, this is going to happen and this is going to happen, that, you know, setting goals. Like, in between all that, you said, you know what? And this is before you even declared I'm moving, like, in September, all that fun stuff.
Way before.
You were pretty much with me, and it was during one of the before or after records of Jump Point. I can't remember which episode. I would have to really think about it.
Yeah, I don't know. It would definitely be 4 or 5 months ago.
Probably. You essentially said, hey, you know, I'm doing you would first tell me about this album you were doing. I don't even know if it had a name. I don't know if you'd call it Mercury Counter at that point.
It definitely did not.
All you had told me was, hey, I have this idea for an album where it's going to use voice samples from this public domain movie called Dead on Arrival, and kind of do that. And you're like, oh, that sounds like a great idea. You're telling a concept of the movie about this guy that gets poisoned and he's got to kind of solve his own murder. I was like, that sounds really awesome. It's noir. I'm all in. I'm all in for that album. And then somewhere along that line, maybe about a week or two later, you're like, you know, I think I'm going to get this mastered, actually. I think I'm going to start a Kickstarter to get this done.
Oh, you know, I think the timeline was a little longer than that.
It might be a bit longer than that, for sure.
But yeah, at one, it definitely was, okay, I'm going to work on this album. And then about 70% of the way through, I was like, I'm sure I want to get this mastered because previous to actually starting on this thing, I had been testing the waters on getting on iTunes, getting mastered, going through all those processes. I knew pretty early on if it was going to come out, it would get mastered. And then it was only maybe about 2 months before the Kickstarter started, so maybe 3 months or so, that that the idea was like, well, I could Kickstart it, because mastering is expensive.
Yes.
Mastering 10 tracks is about, for the guy that I use, is about $600.
So explain, this is something I've never quite understood, because I've always wondered on the music side, what exactly goes into mastering? Like, I know the recording side and levels and stuff like that, but like, what happens when you send something to get mastered?
So the way it works is that you send the studio, or in case this guy, you send him your uncompressed final mix. So you set the loudness between different instruments. You do a specific EQ, and then you kind of keep it quiet, and you send it to the studio, and they are, all they focus on is finishing it, of making it kind of shiny. So they compress it with how it sounds. So if you've got kind of this quiet thing, they're not gonna brick wall it to shit and make it like this little sausage. Like they sort of maintain the dynamic range that you're looking for, as well as they'll push certain instruments. So like when I released Heart Rate and Awash earlier this year, those got mastered. And listening to the differences between the unmastered and the mastered, at first it doesn't seem very different, but once you hear it a lot, you realize, oh wow, they really punched the kick on this. They really maybe were able to compress it and make everything sort of equal out sort of the volume stuff. So that's what a lot of it is doing final touches that I am just not a detailsy type person.
Well, it's,
right?
It's so much, my, yeah,
because my idea of mastering for everything pre Heart Rate and Awash has been, limit the shit out of everything. Make it a brick wall of just noise. And it kind of works. It kind of works, but it's not very refined, and it just isn't much attention to detail.
Whereas these guys are like, okay, if this is gonna be this, we're gonna mix for, you know, speakers, make sure it sounds as good as it can there, have headphones on, make sure it sounds good as we can there, and kind of taking what makes the best of that song. And making sure that shines versus anything else.
Exactly. I mean, I am literally a bedroom. This is my bed right behind me. And so I just have these tiny little desktop speakers. And, I think I make really good music, but desktop speakers are not going to give me the sound or the loudness that I would need to be able to give this thing a very deep and granular analysis.
Right. And even then, sometimes having somebody that knows a thing or two about sound levels, like I've learned enough in terms of audio and spoken word just from doing podcasting, but I could never ever like master, I could never touch like levels on an album, I could never know what to do, that kind of stuff. Like that's where my audio engineering like knowledge ends
it's subjective with music. That's the problem, is that, you know, when you talk about broadcast, you aim for negative 12 and you don't go over negative 6 and just make it so you can hear it. And with music, it is so subjective and just a different case every time.
Yeah, no, it's tricky. And that, so anyway, so we knew that you knew this album was going to get mastered and everything else, and you knew that the cost was there. And so sometime, I don't even exactly know when roughly, but you basically told me, either again before or after Jump Point Record, I think I've been launching Kickstarter for this thing.
I remember the day that I decided on this. I was frantically pacing around my office at work because I was like, oh my god, I can make a Kickstarter and I can do merchandise. Holy fuck, I can make merchandise and I can get money to do it.
Because like the funny thing is, you had asked me and you had been like nervous of like, I don't know if I should do this. And I'll say this right here. If ever you here, this is now a tip to the audience and a tip to my friend Bryce. If you ever don't want to do something and you, like, you really honestly just want someone to tell you, don't do it, do not ask me. I am the wrong person to talk to you about that, because I am all for doing things. Even if it's like the craziest, biggest dream in the planet, I am all for saying, fuck yeah, do that. Like, I just do it. What do you have to lose? Like, I am the wrong person if you want to have, like, if you want to have someone tell you, you know what, don't go over that mountain. Don't reach that high. Don't go grab the brass ring. Like, mm-hmm. just stay down here in the ground. Like, do not talk to me. I am the wrong person for that.
I think my trepidation with the Kickstarter was that I don't know if I could. I have a lot of internalized shame. I hate making mistakes. And so my thought process was, fuck, if I couldn't get a Kickstarter funded, for a modest goal, by the way, if you look at Kickstarter and you look at other music goals, they are 10, 30 times what I ask.
Oh, yeah.
So I thought this was a pretty modest goal. And I thought, if I can't even get that much kickstarted, like, what fucking chance do I have?
No, and that's why sometimes it is. But like I said, when Bryce said, "Hey, I'm thinking of doing this," I was like, "Fuck yeah, of course! Why wouldn't you do it? I'm all in. Like, you just let me know what help you need, what things you need from me, and then I think it'd be like later you'd show me sort of this preview of the page. Okay, this is something I've got to ask, because I have been so out of the loop with Kickstarter as a platform. Did you have to get approved now in Kickstarter? Because I know Indiegogo, you just, like, you know, you like, and I did it. I've done a failed Indiegogo, so that's my fun thing. I know you can just flip the switch on Indiegogo and they're just like, fuck it, it's all yours. But I know Kickstarter, like, their policy at one point was you got to get approved. You got to go through
everything.
People. Right.
Right. That was actually a very big worry of mine, because once I was getting close to launching the Kickstarter, there was a lot of waiting. We can talk about this in a minute, but so it was I think it was Sunday, a night attack day, and I was like, I really need to get this launched today, because I know night attack is going to help with a lot of this. And the Kickstarter changed their policy really recently, like in the past few months, where you don't need to be approved. It'll scan your text and your Kickstarter profile, you know, to make sure you're not shady and that you say stuff that real Kickstarters usually say. And then you can just instant launch if I guess you meet whatever criteria that is.
This is how the potato salad got launched, because I'm certain if somebody at Kickstarter had saw that.
Well, and Kickstarter's whole thing is, even their approval process doesn't look at content. It just looks that you have a definitive goal.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Or you can actually ask them to give it a once over and approve it, which is kind of interesting.
Huh.
But I guess that's for if you're like, I don't know a lot about Kickstarters. I want to make sure I'm doing stuff Kickstarter people do. And I really didn't have that worry.
Right, because it's an album.
Well, yeah, and I've backed Kickstarters before. I've backed a lot of Kickstarters before. I've followed a lot of Kickstarters. So I have a good idea of what people are looking for.
Yeah, and I've said many a times, you know, Kickstarter for me, it's now become less of the funding project as a joke. I mean, this is the joke answer. It's become less about me funding projects now, because I'm pretty certain what I'm going to fund and what I'm not going to fund. It's now become filling out that little pie wheel with every color
pursuit pie piece.
I don't know what it is about that. That's just like, it is. It's ridiculous. It's stupid. And I understand. So if anyone has any photography projects that they're really want funded by yours truly and wants promoted and like sold, just let me know, because that's, I think, one of the pie wheels I got to fill is, I think, a film. And I think I got to fill food. I think it's film and food. I think those are my last. Those are two of like the four. Like I have I have a lot of them, because of just all the random stuff I funded. So for me, when Bryce said I'm thinking do this, like, yeah, totally. And he showed me his first kind of pass through. Like, what was your first kind of initial idea? Because obviously, you know, you had planned the Kickstarter, but it was, you told me it was like, you didn't have anything kind of done. You just sort of had this broad idea of like, should I try this, Robert? And I was like, yeah, totally.
Yeah, at first I knew I wanted to do the Kickstarter. because it would be because it makes sense. It makes sense, at least to me, to do an album and to make a run of merchandise associated with it.
Right.
And if you can work with the margins and make it make sense, it's like a no brainer. Like, it's just a time thing at that point. You just get shit and then you ship shit. So the thought process was definitely difficult for at least figuring out what I wanted to make. That was the big thing, was like, okay, pretty easy shirt, poster, and then the idea for stickers and for buttons came later. The actual doing the physical CD was like the thing that got me really wanting to do a Kickstarter, because how fucking badass would that be to have a physical CD, right?
Which I've realized how important that is now to musicians.
To my ego.
Well, to ego, but to musicians in general. Like, it's funny because, like, I'm such a digital music guy that I don't even think about that now. But I understand now how important it is to have something tangible, especially for musicians. It doesn't have to necessarily be a CD per se. Like, if it's like a vinyl, it depends, like, almost how it ranks, like that. Like, I've started in recent years, and this is such a weird anomaly for me, kind of collecting almost collector cassette tapes. For certain hip hop artists that'll do that. Like, I know Kay Murdoch did one recently for his soundscapes, and I have a Forever Famicom from Raheem, and even then I got the 8-bit The Call that he released on vinyl. And I'm noticing that's the trend, is that because, you know, we're now in an era of things like Bandcamp and stuff like that, people can put digital music out with really not much effort. That the physical becomes such an important thing to a musician, because it's something tangible, something they can sign, it's something they can kind of give out.
Well, and it's become more meaningful, actually, I think, physical CDs. Like, I look at the past CDs that I've bought, and I've got two of them right here. Was the fucking Possum Posse, which I bought at their concert.
Yep.
Because I didn't have any of their music, and fuck if I was going to look it up on iTunes. And then is an album I imported. I spent a lot of money, but I like this album and I really like this artist. And having an actual physical CD is like, oh, wow, I actually got this from the other side of the planet. That's cool.
Yeah, like, go for it. Sorry.
But there's a significance to it where in the 90s or so, if you were putting music out, you were putting it out on a CD.
Yeah.
And so it's no longer the de facto option. Now the de facto is on iTunes, and every motherfucker's on iTunes.
Yeah, it's funny. Yeah, for me, like, you're absolutely right. When I buy CDs, it's usually at concert venues. It's usually from, like, bands that I'll never see kind of again, like Japanese bands when it comes to Japan Night and things like that. So so I've understood now how important that is. And when you had said to me, I'm thinking of doing this just for the, you know, at least the physical album alone, I was like, okay, here are the things that, as a guy that has kickstarted or bought physical copies of CD of albums from artists that he likes, what I, as that person, tends to enjoy about that. Like, if I buy, for example, a physical piece of media, whether it be a vinyl, a cassette tape, or a CD, like, I expect to have the option to have it signed. And if I'm a Kickstarter, like, that'd be really cool to have just the sign thing. Even if it's not a big time artist or somebody that's going to be worth money, it adds to that kind of thing. You'd gone through all the options. Okay. So I can't, you showed me the preview of stuff, and this is like your first kind of pass the Kickstarter. Like, what was your initial kind of idea with that first pass, you know, in terms of like setting up all the elements? Like, what was the hard, I guess, you know, let's break down the Kickstarter process. Let's kind of break down stuff. What was the hardest thing to get done for the Kickstarter? Was it the text? Was it the video? Was it a combination of the two?
The video technically wasn't very difficult for me. I mean, that is my wheelhouse.
Right.
So actually, the probably the toughest part of the video was actually being in front of the camera and like actually having to say, you know, a 3-page script, which almost all got cut anyway. And was wrong. Was also wrong in a lot of places. We can get on that. You know, the text was difficult. Part of the difficulty with the text was logistically keeping everything right. You know, you have to fill out all of the rewards separately, and you have to kind of decide how you're going to word it so that it's quick to read, but also makes sense to someone who says, who looks at it and says, okay, so it has this and it has everything else, or it has this and it only has this, or it has only has this combination of stuff, right? And then you have to duplicate all that stuff into the description, but you have to expand it. You have to do graphics. Graphics were tough, just getting off my butt and doing it. And so you kind of have to fill all of these roles, keep all of this copy straight. You have to just keep it. You have to. It's a lot to manage, so you have to make sure it's all actually done, and you don't have a bunch of placeholder shit when you actually go live.
Well, because that was the thing that when you showed me the first one of the past, like one of the things you had that I had asked if it could be a possibility just because of things, and you eventually changed it midstream. Was the idea of if I buy this upper tier reward, that I get the lower tier stuff with it,
making everything cumulative,
right? And if I think back that time, like you were not adamant against it, you were just more like, how do I
was,
keep that?
I mean, I was, I it was not, I think I had considered it, and I really didn't want to do it, partially because, I thought, in defensive against it, I thought, it's got these three major pieces of merchandise, right? It's got the CD, it's got the shirt, and it's got the poster. Anything else is ancillary. Because these are the three most expensive things,
right?
Bar none, basically. And so instead of making somebody pay all this money just to get the shirt, which kind of ended up how it was, they could just get the shirt and the CD. The CD was kind of was requisite for anything. And then you could just get the shirt and not have to deal with the poster, or you could just get the poster and not deal with the shirt. But you're right. That's a complicated process to fit into a one thing snippet, right? People are used to Kickstarters that are cumulative.
Yeah.
And that's what made me pick my decision, was that people are used to cumulative Kickstarters. It's easier to explain. And by doing at least a limited edition price of the t-shirts, at offering a $6 discount, which is not so much of it's enough of a discount to make you think it's to be a real discount, that would at least kind of soften the blow of like, I have to pay this much just to get a goddamn shirt, even though you get all of this other stuff.
Right. And the thing is, the funny thing about Kickstarters, and I've learned that just as a guy that's kickstarting a lot of the video game ones and things like that, people don't, like, I don't ever think that. I never think, for example, what I see, and this is now the psychology of Robert Kickstarter. So if ever you want Robert's money, this is how you do it.
Yes.
I never think that I have to pay that much for a t-shirt. I go, man, I really want that t-shirt, and that poster looks really cool too. Mm-hmm. I guess I could get both. That'd be really awesome to have both things at the same time. I never think of them as separate objects. I always go, man, I wish I had the money to get all three. Mm-hmm. Fuck it, I'll get the two because that's what I can afford. Like that's what, like, yeah. Like there was a quickly say on Rushi's one, I think they had like a challenge coin on their laser team one that I really wanted the coin because it sounded like a cool thing, but it was like a way more cost than I was willing to put in just because of budget concerns. But it was still a cool concept. So anyways, so then you switch cumulative. What has been like, especially when it comes to physical, obviously we're not at the point where you physically film it. This is like literally, you know,
well, you know, I actually could talk numbers right now about
it. Go for it. Yeah, let's talk some numbers, especially that you're able to reveal. Like, what was your most popular reward out of all the things so far?
The most popular certainly was the $10 digital copy. I'm trying to pull up the numbers right here. 63% of backers chose the $10 reward, but that only accounted for 32% of the money.
Oh, interesting.
Let's see. Is that's still the most out of anything?
Right, and that makes sense because, you know, people are like, I just want the music, and there's a lot of those that happen like that. But out of all the physical,
I guess it would say, because it's cumulative, it's kind of weird to say. It would just be the CD or the signed CD, which ended up being about 13. Well, if you look cumulative, it's 13 total.
Right.
what is that, six? I guess it's about six who just got a CD level on their own without anything other. And then it kind of goes up from there. The poster, not a lot of people went for the shirt, which actually kind of bummed me out a little bit.
What?
But with the shirt and the poster, both of those are print on demand.
Right,
so,
exactly.
Ideally, I wouldn't lose money on those. But the fulfillment company that I chose to go with before the Kickstarter started gave me a much, much lower price on t-shirts and posters than the company that I went with. But the original company would not email me back. They only worked via email, and they would not ever email me back. And so I said, fuck it. I will just go with Printful. I will eat the, like, $5 per and just let it be. But at least I'm not having to order, you know, 20 of them and then being screwed with a box of huge thing, of big thing, not like stickers or like pins that I can just throw, like a lot of stuff.
Like a shit ton of shirts and a shit ton of posters.
Especially posters, because you basically have to store them in those media tubes.
Yep. And I'll tell you from a personal perspective why I tend not to get shirts.
Yeah.
And I don't know if this is everybody, and this is purely just me. Mm-hmm. I tend to wear out shirts. Like, shirts tend to, not because, you know, the nature of clothes, you know, you sometimes get a hole in them, stain, whatever. And so that's mm-hmm. what happens to me in shirts. So for me, shirts are such a temporary thing in that regard. I don't really think of them as, like, what I want for reward.
Oh.
I'll get a poster because usually if it's an artist I know or someone's going to come by, I can get it signed and eventually get that framed. And if people have seen sort of my backgrounds for a lot of my video stuff that I do here locally in my apartment, you'll see usually a poster in the frame, either a fan game or a poster or whatever. I'm right now need to put posters behind my we're not really doing video of this podcast, but you know, Bryce and I
it's a blank wall.
It's a blank wall right now.
I'm making a call to a correctional institution.
but there's posters I'm working to put up and so like that, I need to hang them. So for me, posters are a very big deal. Like I have posters I've yet, like, they're just rolled up in media tubes that I need to frame one day, but they're like just a little too costly to frame right now. Like, there have been BlizzCons that I've attended virtually simply to get access to the store to then buy a Diablo 3 poster.
Wow.
It's such a and I don't know what. Well, because I really enjoy it, because I think it's, for me, is that, you know, I'm not necessarily the kind of guy that's going to buy a full, honest to God, like, painting quite yet. I'm not at that level yet, because that's like, this will cost you $200. I'm like, I understand why it costs $200, and I'm totally cool with that. I just can't, you know.
It's another order of magnitude.
Exactly. And so for me, posters is that kind of happy medium where I can still display something that I think is beautiful and gorgeous in there. And so when it comes to that's why I tend to go poster style. And I was like, you know, when you mentioned that specific reward, I'm like, I know I'm gonna get that reward just because of the nature of how those things are. Mm-hmm. And such. Okay, so you obviously went with print on demand, you went that's lower that cost, you've done the physical CD. Mm-hmm. What was the most nerve-wracking point of your launch? Was it the launch itself, or
it was definitely the pre-launch. I worked with the amazing art. Go follow him on Twitter at Celucius, C-E-L-L-I-O. Wait, hold on.
If not, we'll put a link in the show notes.
C-E-L-L-U-S-I-O-U-S. All right. Celucius.
We'll put a link in the show notes for sure.
Olav, and he is this amazing young artist. And I knew there was going to be a lot of design stuff with this entire project. And I think I'm a pretty decent designer. I am not an illustrator, which is what I needed. And so there was kind of this long process working with him, because he was going through his own stuff. And just like seeing the clock, like, I need to get this started by a certain date so I can end it by a certain date and have X amount of days to fund it. That was probably just the most stress. Now that everything's done, it's a lot of waiting. It's a lot of waiting in the mail, and it's it's its own frustration, but at least I can like, I can be like, I can settle.
Well, yeah, because how did, like, you know, now that's successful, we'll jump back to the process of then the marketing and that kind of stuff and how you went about that, because you had some interesting ideas and sort of things you did to promote the whole Kickstarter.
Yeah.
But have you gotten the money yet as a point? Like, how does that post stuff work? Because I know it takes, like, it has a certain time window with Indiegogo, but I don't know how Kickstarter works and such like that.
So with Kickstarter, they say it takes up to 2 weeks for the money to transfer to your bank account, not to a PayPal, but to transfer to your bank account. I'm going to see if it's actually come in yet. It doesn't look, no, it doesn't come in yet, but, so it'll probably be another, week or so for me to actually get it, but I have liquid cash now and I can just start working on this stuff. But yeah, it takes 2 weeks because it has to go through everybody's credit card and, you know, let people know when their credit card doesn't work and all that stuff.
Yeah. Have you had any of those sort of like weird anomalies? Like, cause I know sometimes Kickstarter people, like, not all the time, you know, cause I, you know, this is something I want to make sure we get, because this is one of those few times like I get a chance to talk to someone that's actually succeeded versus me that's failed. Were there any issues in terms of people like not being charged correctly? Did you have any problems, like, obviously yet, or have you not learned?
I haven't gotten any issues with people saying they've gotten charged incorrectly. I have noticed there's only two people now who have had credit card issues. Just the card might be expired or something. But I haven't had any issues.
Well, that's not bad then. Jesus, that's actually pretty good, because usually that's sort of the downfall of a lot of Kickstarters, is that they'll get a whole bunch of traffic and a lot of people who really have no desire to fund the project. And they'll have
fake pledges.
Exactly, fake pledges. And I'm glad to hear that yours is actually pretty much that. Like, that was my fear, is I'd hear you say, yeah, I got about half fake pledges and some dickhead would have done that. But I'm glad to hear that it's only like two guys, because that sounds to me like actually, honestly, oh, crap, it was expired. Never mind. Let me correct that.
Yeah. And I know one of the names on it, and I'm pretty sure it's just an expired card.
Well, that's good to hear. I mean, that's good, because
it's fantastic.
Because that's great, because that means, you know, you'll get, you know, obviously with Kickstarter, they take how much of a cut of it?
All told, between Kickstarter and Amazon, it's about 10%.
So okay, so you'll get the majority, if you know, of the money.
I'll actually get about $1,000 straight on it.
That's not bad. That is not bad at all. Especially, you know.
It is good. It's not a major take. But actually, I actually ran the numbers the other day. Do you want to know what my net on the Kickstarter is?
What's a net?
Just how much I'm gonna, how much money I'm gonna make or lose,
right,
on this thing. Negative $252.
Is this from, like, what did you okay, let's talk about that. Did you forget to factor in that you wish you had factored in the cost?
So I think there's two things that have definitely contributed to it. A, switching the fulfillment company for the shirt and the poster. I mean, the base prices were like $5 to $10 difference. Like, it was a major difference. But I guess I kind of should have expected that when the cheap option was like, that was the only cheap price that I found. But I think the other thing that got me kind of screwed up was the buttons. See, I went, the company that's doing the buttons, there were two ways I could have ordered them. I could have ordered three individual orders of single buttons. So I just got three boxes of A, B, and C. Or you can get a three pack where they put it on a paper card, they put the pins there, and they wrap it in cellophane. And that is probably, If ordering the three separate designs is about $75, it's more expensive than I anticipated. I accidentally thought of those three, I actually was only looking at ordering one. I didn't multiply by three.
Oh,
so that was kind of a miscalculation there. But also because I did that 3-pack, the minimum is a lot higher.
Right,
because they're 50 instead of 25.
Right, because they're individually packaging them, things like that.
Right.
Okay.
So, and that's the other side of this is I'm going to walk away from this with a lot of pins and stickers.
So you're going to have a lot of shit to pass out at conventions.
Yeah. Well, and that was actually, that's actually kind of one of the side effects that I was anticipating and I'm very proud is happening is that by moving over to this new by moving over to Printful for fulfilling the t-shirts and posters, not only can they take these orders now, they can also, I can hook them up to an e-commerce store afterwards, so orders can go directly to them.
Yep.
And suddenly I have a store. It's an infrastructure under there.
And as a sort of weird side benefit of you moving to Austin, and I don't know if you've thought about this, but it's just sort of a thing. Austin, I'm not sure if you've heard, but we're kind of a music town. You know, I'm not sure if you've ever thought of doing live stuff. I don't want to push you there, but
yeah,
the option is there.
You know what's funny is like I have been asked multiple times to do like live stuff, and I don't have a live act. Like, there's no live act for me. This album really doesn't have, like, bangers. Like, it's got a couple of, like, kind of banger songs, but, like, it's really sad and depressing. I don't play keyboard or much very well. Like, my strength is in producing and not so much performing.
Here, we'll just get you two Game Boys and you'll learn you'll learn some chiptune stuff. We'll take you places. All right, so let's get back to that. So obviously you lost a little bit of money, which is it's fine. I mean, it's
better than the $600 that I was looking at before.
Yeah, that's not bad. I mean, ultimately, you know, I figured your biggest thing was going to be like tax or something like that, like something you didn't necessarily think about.
I'm not so worried about the tax because it'll all be I can't speak for the tax code, but I'm pretty sure it'll all be countable as an expense.
Yeah, I think so, because ultimately I think technically, and this is from the guy that's now running an LLC, I think it's like at $10,000, it's still considered a personal gift at that point.
Yeah.
It's not
a really good question for either of us.
Well, yeah, exactly. But regardless of that fact, like that, you know, if you claim it, it's not, in all intents purposes to the IRS, you still have to claim the $1,000 that you got it, right. But it's not necessarily.
But then I had, $1,200 of expenses that went along with
it. Right, exactly. And then they even out. And ultimately, if you pay any tax, it's going to be, I guess, what, like at the most 30% of $1,000, which, I mean, it's still
about $300.
About $300, something you could at the end of the year most likely make up with other sources of income and things like that. Yeah. So it's not terrible. Yes. But anyway, so you obviously did this whole, you know, switch in the middle. So launching, what it sounds like, was the nerve-wracking part just of getting everything.
Yeah.
Once we got into the process, the swing of things, like once it was out there, mm-hmm. What was the hardest, like, because obviously you got funded pretty quickly into it, I think.
Yeah, it was a 3-week campaign. It got funded on the 7th day, about a week in.
Was that like the moment of relief for you? Was that like, because you had got a really strong first couple of days.
Yeah.
And then it kind of, you know.
My worry, I mean, I was glad once it made the goal. I kind of, and not to be cocky, but I had a pretty good feeling it was gonna make it. I thought it was a very modest goal. But what kind of worried me is that almost immediately after it, like, totally died. Like, I got to 1,010 on a weekend in, and I ended with 1,112. So what I made in one day, the first week, I didn't make for the rest of the next 2 weeks. And I had people turning down their, lowering their pledge, which, funny enough, the Kickstarter app won't tell you about.
Well, because I wonder if that was the case, was that, you know, because you got a little bit of promotion on Night Attack on you know, Brian Brushwood and Justin Robert Young's podcast. Mm-hmm. And that has this, you know, I've learned about Night Attack, that, you know, the plus of that of getting promotion on that, and the downside of getting promotion on that, is that a lot of people do things for the moment of the live thing to have them do something silly. Yeah. And not all of them are honestly going to keep with it. You know, not in a bad way, you know, and they suffer through this all the time with their Patreon as a concept.
Well, and I think that could have been part of it.
I don't think that was a major reason.
But I will say most of, I think a lot of the sort of chat realm pledges came in on the first few days through Twitter. That actually accounted for 40% of all the pledges.
Oh, really?
And like almost 50% of all the funds.
Yeah, what are what kind of statistics do they give you on Kickstarter? I've never actually, like I said, I'm more familiar with Indiegogo side than Kickstarter. I know Kickstarter is...
Oh my God, it's like the statistics are great. So they'll tell you, you'll see the breakdown of like what referred you, whether it's Twitter, whether it was the internal Kickstarter search, whether it was direct links, Facebook, Google, and it'll differentiate between whether somebody found it from Kickstarter.com or from outside. They'll give you statistics on who watched your video and where, your most popular pledges, and a graph, your funding graph. It's interesting to see. I think it's still very low volume for me, so right. There wasn't a lot of, because I think most of the chat realm stuff came Sunday during the day when Justin tweeted about it. And so on Sunday nights when Night Attack was on, there really weren't a lot of play. That wasn't a major driver. Actually.
Well, yeah, because you weren't necessarily a guest or on that. It's just sort of that, you know, I think
it was mentioned.
Yeah, I think Brand had mentioned it and that was that. I got to ask, this is something I'm curious about because this sure. You're the only person I've talked to that does a Kickstarter. At any point during the funding, did you check KickTrack?
A lot. yeah, I checked it. I kept checking it, and then I had to make myself stop checking it because it was destroying the projection. Like after the first few days, it was like projection over $3,000, and then like the second week, it was like over $2,000.
So let me explain really quickly.
As it kept slowing down,
yeah.
I was like, okay, well, maybe it'll turn back up on the last week, which is what Kickstarters usually do.
Yes.
And did not happen at all.
So let me explain what KickTrack is to those who have no idea. This is something that if you're really into Kickstarters and sort of following it, that you understand and you know. KickTrack essentially is a secondary service that basically watches nothing but Kickstarter data. Mm-hmm. And like make projection on how things potentially will get funded, and if right. the current trend is going that way, that's where they're going to go.
Yeah,
I say that because like we, you know, when Bryce and I talk about Kickstarters, we always refer to KickTrack to show how things are going, and we make jokes about it and things like that.
Yeah.
But I was curious if you had checked your own, just out of like, well, let's see what the projections say. Oh yeah. Shit, I'm gonna do great.
I had to stop because I knew it was gonna give me like I understand that a lot of Kickstarters, especially huge ones, it's you get a lot of it in the first few days, and then you get a lot of it in the last few days.
Right.
But KickTrack doesn't really account for that. KickTracker just looks for like a linear growth. I saw the projection going down, and eventually by the second week, I was like, you know, it's going to be stable. It's going to really push where it's at. But it was kind of interesting. But the Kickstarter statistics that they give me, I think were plenty.
Well, yeah, I mean, because obviously you got to at least see where everybody came from and sort of what was doing well, what was not doing well. I mean, obviously the mission, you know, for you and when you started talking about pricing in the beginning was like you priced it as close as you could to having everything fulfilled.
It wasn't priced to cost. That was the thing. It was priced to the percentage because I knew 60% needs to be free, or not free, but it needs to be able to go to the mastering, and then 40% needs to account for the actual cost of making it. So I was trying to do it at least smart.
Right.
But what's funny is doing all the math beforehand in the pre-planning stages, I even kind of knew if it hit $1,000 square, it wouldn't be enough. I mean, not that it wouldn't be enough, but it would be a net negative by a little bit, because either you have to pay for the iTunes fulfillment,
yep,
or just, you know, doing a kind of 60% margin is just a little bit not enough. You know, it's close enough. I'm not saying at all. It's not going to get done, because that's not it. But
But the thing is, when we talked about it, you had priced it, that the Kickstarter itself, the goal, to as close as you could. Mm-hmm. And if things had kind of gone further, you know, we would have had a net positive, and that's okay. Things yeah. happen and stuff like
that. And that would have been like $1,200-$1,300. Like, right. It was close.
Yeah. No. And it did pretty good. Okay, so kind of we're almost out of time here, and we'll definitely get you back.
Talk about promotions.
Yeah, we're gonna talk about that. We'll definitely get you back on after you fulfilled and stuff, because I'm doing this as a saga, almost a study, because I'm capturing Bryce after success of that, and I don't want to
make it sound like I'm a test subject.
Well, you are in this regard, because I don't know that many people who do Kickstarters and that have done them successfully. That I've actually been able to talk about at those moments.
Sure.
And this is one of those opportunities I get to talk to somebody who I know is sort of in the same boat that I am in when it comes to doing these sort of things, that doesn't quite know all the ins and outs of physical fulfillment, that's learning all these ins and outs, and that, you know, by capturing somebody at that stage, at all the different stages I can, I think it's going to be beneficial to other people down the road who are thinking about this or don't quite understand how to do this, don't know all the different processes that someone has to go through. And hearing somebody that's kind of in their shoes can be so, so helpful, especially that. So we'll definitely get you back on for that. But let's go back to your promotion thing, 'cause I think that was the coolest thing that you did throughout the whole thing.
Sure. I knew a lot of the audience that I would be looking for would be like chat realm type people. And would kind of be sort of the indie love audience,
right?
Who are into live streaming, who maybe have seen me do live streams or game streaming or podcasting, and so I knew that was something that I could do, would fit the bill of the project, and would hopefully hit some of those people, and I think it did. So I did two different game streams of Beat Hazard playing the album with Beat Hazard, and then Crypt of the Necro Dancer playing the album.
Which one worked best for the game?
Oh, Beat Hazard by a mile. I like Crypt of the Necro Dancer is a very good game, but it is not good for custom music. I mean, it's there, but like, it's not good for this custom music.
I'm like, Crypt is the game that I want to find. Like, I need to first figure out how to get custom music working on the Mac, because I so want to find what songs work best in Crypt of the Necro Dancer, because it's such a it's such a dead. But you know, it was really cool. You know, going back to the concept, it was really cool that you had the idea, because you've been streaming games like that, to take these, you know, because most people, when it comes to streaming an album, would have just streamed the album, would have just, you know, put the album on and said, like, let's have a listening party, woo! And
I think I said I was going to do that at some point.
Right, but it's not
fun.
I
think people are waiting for me to throw a party and do that.
Well, you know, that's a listening party, like, woo! I mean, it's cool.
Yeah.
But doing it in that game form gives a cool visual that I don't think anyone quite understands how kind of interesting that is, especially when it comes to a game, because that's what makes those music games fun, like Audio Surf, even Crypt or Beat Hazard, is that you have this really cool visual based on the music, and it's interactive, and you're able to kind of shoot things, whatever, get a score. And people don't, you know, a lot of musicians don't quite realize how powerful that kind of visual is, like the interactive kind of thing.
Steve Aoki.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, some do.
He took over Twitch and just did. They let him do a music stream, but he didn't play any games.
No.
Just
yeah. Steve right. Aoki. And the thing is, you being in this kind of, you know, a person that's a gamer, person that live streams games, you know, you do a game podcast with me, you know that power, and I'm glad that you did that, because like, that's so fucking unique. That's so awesome. I was like, that's a brilliant way of showing off the album, especially to a Twitch crowd like that.
Yeah. I mean, it attracted a surprising number of people, maybe a dozen at the most, but you know, Twitch is very shitty about telling you numbers or giving you a good chat room or giving you a good connection. And then we also did the cinematography stream with you and Mr. Brent Hughes, where we talked over the album or the movie, the actual movie that inspired the album.
Yep.
And I think that came out really well. And that's going to be a cinematography episode
soon
in the future.
In the future. Soon-ish. Well, yeah. Well, I'll definitely, we have to get the audio off that. But regardless of that, what I enjoyed about that for sure was that, and my mission from that point, for you guys when you hear the episode, and there's also the archive stream that you can check on Bryce's YouTube channel.
YouTube.com/Neshcom.
It was more of a, I know the album's successful, so, and I know we can talk about the movie, and the movie's great, and it's a fun thing, but I, you know, much in good commentary fashion, I want to try to get Bryce's, almost, while we're watching the movie, sort of the inspiration of the album and things like that, because... You know, we had already been well funded. It was like almost like the last couple of days. So I'm like, well, let me use this opportunity as a way to now do the creative side, because I knew going into that this 8-bit life would happen in my mind to get more of the, you know, if that is the creative inspiration for the album. And if you ever want to hear sort of that side of the interview, go check out that episode of cinematography or that video. This was going to be more the production side of things, especially the early stuff, because I know going into it that you're going to learn a lot, and I don't know of what you're going to learn, but I want to make sure I document it for both you, because I think it's a really cool thing that you've done this, and I'm really as a friend, I'm proud that you've done this. I'm thrilled. I'm excited. I'm happy, because you know I'm not the kind of guy that's like jealous my friend succeeding. Like, no, I'm thrilled my friend succeeds. I'm thrilled when things happen the way they're supposed to happen. And I want to make sure that even though I was part of the initial launch of helping it in my small little micro way of doing
a lot. I mean, you were tweeting about it a lot and making sure people fucking knew about it.
Well, because I want to make sure it happens. Because if you ever wonder, anything I truly fund people on Kickstarter, except for one Kickstarter, I didn't really care if it was funded. Anything you ever see my name funded on, I care if it gets funded. I get nervous. I get weird, especially like when it's games. Like, I think for me, the one game I was so nervous of it not getting funded was Abduction from the guys at CN Worlds, because there was a point where I was like, it's not there yet, and it's like only a week, and it's like barely there. I'm like, please get it funded, because I want to see this game come out. I want, and it was the same thing with your album. I was like, I want this to happen because I want to see it. You know, not because, hey, it's a friend. I mean, yes, that's part of it, but me putting money as a guy that wants to see this happen, I will do, you know, move, even if I'm a small little guy, I will move the ends of the earth to get it done, because I want to see it happen. Mm-hmm. But regardless of all that, because we're pretty much out of time here, is there any sort of parting words you have to say at this point in time for your experience with Kickstarter? Obviously, we'll check in with you again once stuff goes out or it's a process of going out. It's like, Bryce, how's it going? I've been up for 8 days straight shipping shit. I fucking hate the world. Like, when we get to that point, we'll capture that Bryce of just like, I'm angry at everybody. But what is your kind of parting sort of words at this point in time with your whole Kickstarter process, the album, everything in between?
It's definitely find your audience, have an audience. Nick, who is actually doing one of the remixes on the album, said that he was looking at doing a Kickstarter soon for something his band is doing, and I told him you have to have an audience first. Like, you can do all the planning in the world, and I thought if that was one thing I really kind of had on point, was having planning. Trying to have a good amount of promotion for as much as I could, because the music was in a weird place where I couldn't send it out to music blogs because I wasn't done. But knowing what avenues you're going to look at and knowing what audience is going to be interested is the most important thing. You know, a Kickstarter is not, there's no brownie points in Kickstarter.
No.
So I guess that would be it.
There you go. That is all you need to know right now. We'll check back in with Bryce once he's gone through physical fulfillment hell and such. But for right now, Bryce, where can people find you online if they want to follow you and do all the cool things and learn all the cool things you do?
Sure. You can follow me on Twitter at Brycas, B-R-Y-C-A-S, or check out the website, neshcomplex.com, N-E-S-H-complex.com. You'll find music and the SoundCloud. And, you know, one of the parts of this Kickstarter, not to keep bringing it back, but was to make streams available, make it freely available on things like SoundCloud and YouTube and Spotify. And so I'm really glad that that was able to get done, that I could do Creative Commons type stuff, because letting people actually use music in an age where Twitch and YouTube are being real pressured by the law, which is very slow to change. It's nice to be able to do that.
Awesome. Of course, you can find me. I'm at Vincent404 on the Twitter. If you want to comment on this episode, talk about your Kickstarter experience, maybe your music experience, head to our website, cosmicradio.tv/8bitlife. There you'll find links to show notes and stuff, and anything else in this network, including the show I do with Bryce here called Jump Point, where we in the future will talk about the whole Twitch thing, because I've got words.
Oh my God, that's right. We're going to have a 2-hour episode tomorrow just to talk about Twitch.
There's so much to talk about on that. And I have words. I will give a tease right now of it. And if you want to hear my opinion of what's going to be, I want you to look back to the war that happened with Live 365. That's all I'm going to say. That's how far back this is going to go. And everything. That's far back, but far back, yeah. it factors into it. We'll get into that later. And of course, if you want to help out this show and kind of show your support for independent content, head to our Patreon at patreon.com/8bitlife. Everyone that sponsors it and helps out here, thank you so much for all your patronage and everything you guys do. You are my hardest of hardcore awesome people, and I thank each and every one of you in your own special unique fashion. So that's it for today. So tune in next week. We'll talk to another geek about something completely and utterly random. Bye, people.